folks. Welcome to another episode of the Netmums podcast. How are you this week, Alison?
I've got a bit of a rant, actually, Wendy. I know that rants are more your thing, but I'm going to go in with a rant.
Here we go.
I mean, anyone listening, if you work from home, do you have this thing where your partner or other members of your family have an expectation that you'll just casually do some housework while you're working, like load the dishwasher, you know, do some laundry, maybe get a loaf of bread in? It is kind of annoying because I feel like I'm working. Why, just because I'm working from my house, do you have this expectation that I'm going to do extra chores? Does that happen to you, Wendy?
All the time. Oh, there's no milk, is the kind of refrain when someone gets home.
And then you say, do I look like a cow? Like, it's just, what do you do? I mean, I've got to do this with my kids all the time, right? So I'm like, guys, you walk past the sink and you see all these dishes in there. Just please put them in the dishwasher. Yeah, but they're not mine. I said, so when my mum and dad, when we put things in the dishwasher, are they all ours? No, but you see, we're expected. And this is the thing, I'm trying to teach them, but it's not going down too well.
My teenager says to me, yeah, but it's your job to do it. It's not my job. And I'm like, what?
Yeah, that's a good, that's the standard one.
I love that our guest is just chipping into our pre-chat amble. No, it's all good, Peter. I'm gonna let the audience know who it is. Who is this strange voice chipping into our conversation? Because we have got a returning guest this week. We're joined once again by the fantastic Peter Andre, singer, actor, TV personality, and a dad of five. Peter is currently on tour across the UK with the best of Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons. Peter, a warm welcome back to the Netmums podcast.
It's good to be back, guys. I love it. I love the fact that you guys, it's so real and it's so relatable, and it could be mums, but actually dads can relate. Let me tell you, I can definitely relate. And yeah, doing the best of the Four Seasons. And at the moment we're doing the best of winter. That's for sure. Yeah. That's the season. Yes. We're hoping this season won't be too long, but hey, it is what it is.
So last time we spoke to you, was a momentous occasion. You were about to turn 50, and now you're about to turn 52. So tell us, since we were mere spring chickens in our 40s, what have you so far found your 50s to be like?
Well, okay. I have to say I was dreading it, but I was dreading getting into my 40s as well. I remember the day before I turned 40, I was so depressed. I mean, literally, I just thought, 40s, that's it, it's all over. 40s came and I was like, yeah, this is good. Started caring a little less about things you don't need to care about, but I thought, okay, it's good, but still, you know, still quite, you know, figuring yourself out. And then 50s came, I thought, well, that's it, my life's over now. I should just accept this, it's all
no
over.
No drama, you know, it's then, over, that's it.
But then the day, so I rang my sister and I said, Debs, when you turn 50, you know, what's it like? She goes, oh, you feel terrible, but then the next day you feel great. Well, I woke up at 50 and I went, is that it? I was like, this is great. And then I started to notice that things that bothered me a lot just don't really bother me anymore. And it's a beautiful thing because you kind of know who you are. You kind of know what you're like. I feel a lot more chilled as a person. So actually, I think 50s, I mean, I've got no choice. I've got to love it because I'm in it. I've got to love it. But I actually do think it's great. So you guys, I was your age a long, long time ago.
Not that long.
I wish that was true. But also, last time we spoke to you, since then, you have also gained another child. How has life been since little Arabella was born last April?
Crazy. You know, I remember saying when I was in my 40s, I said, I'll never be 50 and changing nappies. I said, if we're going to have any more kids, it will be before 50. And then here I am at 51 changing nappies. And actually, I've actually seen things a bit different. I've actually spent more time those first 6 months. I really, really bonded, because I said to my manager, I've been with the same manager for 30 years. And I said, look, Claire, I really want some time out. I want to really focus all the things that I missed out on with the other kids because work, 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 work. And I did. Those first 6 months were just magic. I mean, espresso became my best friend, of course. You know, you need those coffees. Yeah, they were a really big part. But I happen to have a super duper fantastic wife who's so good as a mom, and she's so on it, you know. So you kind of feel redundant at some points. I wasn't complaining about being redundant sometimes. I'm not going to lie. It was quite like, let me help you. No, no, hon, you go and do. No, no, sweetheart, let me help you. No, you go and do it. Okay. Because you want me to relax, I will. But I wouldn't normally. Just because you want me to. I mean, selfish at times. But no, I do. I do really appreciate her. I think she really is like a lot of there's many amazing mums. But you obviously we're going to praise our own, aren't we?
Did you do that thing where you kind of forget what the newborn days are like and kind of forget?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And we both looked at each other about 3 months in and went, never again.
Sorry. Never, ever again.
Hello.
Hey,
yeah. That's great.
Hello. Sorry, everyone. 13-year-old gate crashing the podcast.
But how cool that your 13-year-old bought you a drink. Like, how lovely
is
that?
I know, that's so nice, Wendy. You got her trained well.
She won't wash it up, though, will she?
No, she might not put it in the sink because she might not wash it up, but she did put it in, gave it to you, so that's great. Of course, we don't know what's in that drink. I remember when my kids used to say, let me make you a drink, Dad, or let me make you your coffee, and I'd be petrified because I didn't know how they were going to make it. You know, they press all sorts of buttons on those machines.
It's not gin and tonic.
No.
Well, maybe in a few years that can be her thing.
Yeah, maybe. So did you forget that whole newborn business and just go crashing back into it and think, oh, God, this is really hard?
And it is. And the thing is, you know, as a guy, and I can only speak on behalf of people I know and my own experience, you feel guilty as a guy sometimes because, you know, when you're so if Emily's breastfeeding and I'm waking up, I always wake up when she wakes up because she can't, you know, depending on how the operation went or whether it was a natural birth or whatever, there's a period of time where they can't really hold the baby or they can't lift the baby. So I remember always getting up when she was up, but then I couldn't do anything. All I could do was hand her the baby. So she would want me to sleep so that we wouldn't both be really tired. But then you're feeling guilty because you're thinking I should be helping. And it just was this cycle of, you know, there was the odd time where she would say, I really need you to go in the other room so that you can be awake for the others in the morning. And I'd like secretly be going, yes, yes, thank you. But I wasn't showing that. I was going, no, hun, that's not right. But yeah, no, I forgot how tiring it was. I did. And you know what? That time goes quick. It doesn't feel quick at the time, but we're 9 months in now and she's just amazing, the baby. She's amazing.
Yeah. You know? What are the older ones like with her? Like, I bet they're having such a great time having a little baby around.
They love her so much.
You posted something on Instagram of Princess with the baby.
Yes, I love that.
See, that to me, that was... It's weird, right? Because sometimes when you post things... I always have this thing where people say, you know, like some things, they didn't say that about this, but you know how sometimes they go, oh, why do people post their kids or why do people post this? It's because you have moments as a parent where you're so proud and you almost want to just show everyone how proud you are as a parent. It's no different when you're meeting people out somewhere and you're going, oh, look at this picture of my kids. And, you know, everyone shows pictures of their kids. Now, that moment when she was lying there with her, I just went, this is just magic. And she was oblivious. And I just started filming her. And of course I showed her and she said to me, oh, you should post that. And I went, yeah, I should actually, because that is beautiful.
It was, it really was. And I've got a 14-year-old and I've also got 6-year-old twins. And I think having older kids is ideal because you can get them to babysit. Do Junior or Princess ever babysit for the younger ones?
So the difference between the girl and the boy in my household is that Princess will be like, yeah, of course, no worries. And, you know, we'll always say, look, we'll give you something, you know, because it's nice. They get a little bit of pocket money and stuff. Junior will say, what day do you need me? And I'll be like, well, in two weeks' time, we're going to go just for dinner. Is that all right? I don't know. I'm going to be busy. I'll have to have a look. Well, why don't you just look in the calendar now? And if there's nothing in there, just block that out. And he's going, yeah, but something might come up. Well, something won't come up if you've blocked it out.
I might get a better offer, Dad.
Yeah. But they're good. I mean, they're great kids. They absolutely love their siblings. And it's a beautiful thing to see. It really is.
So you've said this is it. No more babies. But would you be swayed? If Emily came up to you in 2 years and was like, I want another baby, would you be swayed at 54 or are you done with nappies?
I'm done. And the thing is, what's more important is that she said she's done. The thing is, again, as a guy, and I can only speak about myself here, when she says, shall we try for a baby, sometimes us guys are not thinking with the right brain. We're thinking, oh, trying for a baby. Okay, this could be fun. And you're not really kind of thinking, hang on, this could actually turn into
a baby.
I know, which is stupid because someone's going to go, how could you not realize that? But you're not always thinking correctly at certain times. Anyway, if she said she's not done, I know that it would be a sort of a thing of like, I would try so hard to avoid this happening again because we've got enough children. I mean, how many do we want? But I said to her, why don't I make it permanent? Why don't I do something about it? And she said, would you do that? And I said, yeah. I said, you know, and then we don't have to worry about it anymore. Then I started to get this horrible feeling that you're going to laugh at this. But I literally thought that if you get that done, you start talking like this, right? I literally did. I started freaking out. And I said, I can't do that because she said, what's wrong with you? And I said, well, I said, what if I start speaking really high-pitched? And she's as if I don't speak high-pitched
already. And
for
anyone who doesn't know, listeners, his wife's a doctor.
A doctor.
So she is
pretty lucky.
She knows
what she's talking about.
So
she
convinced
might do it for
me.
You.
She convinced me that that's not going to happen. And I thought, well, okay, she knows. Then it was back on the cards, right? I thought, okay, as if, like I said, as if I haven't got a high-pitched voice already, I don't need a higher one. Anyway, I then went and started asking people who've had it done. And they were like, it's horrific. It's this, it's that. Well, hang on, is it horrific now? No, now it's been a few years. What do you mean a few years? What was it like for the first year? Well, there were moments, right, it just put me off. But I said to Emily, if you really want me to...
Listen to horror stories.
Yeah, it's like when you Google something, when you feel a bit unwell and you Google it and it says, you will die by Thursday. You know what I mean? It's like you just take everything that someone says. So,
do you
anyway,
reckon you will do
know.
It then, Peter?
Probably not now. But I think if
He's
Emily...
He's bottled it.
Look, I'm not going to lie. I've completely bottled it. It's freaked me out. But then again, if something, you know, if it means that she doesn't have to do anything to prevent it, I will do it. But it's going to take some guts to do. And I need to man up. I need to actually just go, you know what, get over it and do it. But I'm just struggling a bit at the moment with
that
thought.
Look, he's got to have a little calming drink of water.
I just need a moment, guys, okay?
Yeah.
I'm having hot flushes. No, I'm not.
Let's pray for Peter.
Yeah.
Do you have those moments, now that you guys have made that decision between you, do you have those moments where Arabella might be doing something and you think, oh, that's the last time that we'll ever get to do that?
That is such a good point. And that is why I wanted to be much more present now, because I knew that was going to happen. She does certain things and I'm like... But is it, that's it? I know that doesn't make sense, but you know what I mean. Is it really, that's it? Because maybe one of my children will bring us children and we can do this all again without all the tiredness and stuff. So maybe that will happen. You know, I think at some point, you know, if it wasn't here, where do you stop? I mean, my dad, believe it or not, his mum and dad together for what, 50, 60 years or however long until they both passed away. He was pregnant 18 times.
Wow.
And dad's the oldest. So they had 13 children. So five didn't survive. They had 13 children. And one of those children, I think, died at 4 or 5 months old. And my dad was the oldest. And he used to get on a donkey because in Cyprus, it was all, you traveled by donkey back then. And he used to go on the donkey to the other village to get the doctor to bring him back for when his mum was about to give birth. And the common joke was that she'd already given birth and she was pregnant with the next one by the time the doctor came. Because that's how often she was pregnant. We come from big families. We love it. But at what point do you say is enough? And I think we've done enough. I really do. I always wanted a boy and a girl. I always wanted to have both. And I've been very blessed to have, you know, a lot of each.
So we had your lovely Emily on a while ago, and she spoke about the struggles she had with her mental health after she'd given birth to Theo.
Yeah.
What kind of support have you given her and has she been having since Belle was born?
Well, she's a very logical person. She, you know, a lot of times doctors can help other people, but when it comes to helping themselves, again, from my experience, I know that they might, you know, it's not always just because they're a doctor, they know what to do for themselves. And I remember we had lots of talks and we sat, and, you know, I've been very open about mental health from way back in the 90s. And I know when you're going through something, mentally, if that's the right way to say it, you feel very alone. It doesn't matter if you know that thousands or millions or however many millions of people are going through it, you feel alone at the time. So instead of just saying, I don't understand, or instead of going, we'll go and see someone about it, sometimes someone just wants to be able to talk to you. And I found that because that's what I needed, I found it easier to be there for her. And I hope it helped her. But she's a very resilient and strong person. But I'm that close to her to know when she's not feeling right. Mm-hmm. And this time was tough for her. The operation was not easy. I don't know if she ever told anyone, but it definitely did not go to plan, and there were some real problems after. And I don't know if she's spoken about it, so I probably shouldn't say. But what I would say is that I saw her go through a very hard time, but I also saw her, you know, parents are both doctors. They were able to also talk to her and explain to her how things were. And I don't know, she just sort of came through the other side.
That's good. And obviously, you know, you talked about your own mental health struggles, and male mental health is talked about so much more now than it used to be.
Yeah.
You know, what do you do to look after your own mental health on a day-to-day basis? And what conversations do you have with Junior and Theo to get them to talk about their feelings?
Well, one of the things was that when I was growing up, you know, we were in a very strict religious family. So mum and dad, there were a lot of things that were a bit taboo to talk about, one of them being this subject. I mean, I remember having a complete breakdown. It was 1998. I was touring. I was at the peak of success. I was in America. I was working with the greatest songwriters, doing arenas in the UK and around Asia, Australia. It was amazing. And then out of nowhere, this horrific breakdown came down, and it happened to be when I had gone back to see mum and dad. Well, of course, I was trying to hide what was going on, and dad kept saying, what's wrong? And I kept saying, oh, no, nothing. I made up all sorts of excuses. When I went to the doctor, my dad and mum took me to the doctor, and I was a grown man, literally like a baby, because I was suffering from these severe panic attacks. It was horrible. And I remember the doctor asking questions and saying, you know, this could be mental health. And my parents are like, what? They were like, what does that mean? And it's like, well,
so
mental health.
So common, isn't it?
So then they would be like, literally, like a scene out of My Big Fat Greek Wedding, mum would say, don't worry, I make you some lamb. and I was supposed to eat a big chunk of lamb, and that was going to make me feel better, right? Because they didn't understand, and I get that. So I then made up this plan that I was going to go to New York to record my fourth album, I think it was. And I said, I'm going to New York to record, but I wasn't. I was going there to find help because I thought everyone in Australia knew who at the time. Knew who we were in England. It was like you'd go somewhere and you were always worried it would, because it was taboo. You didn't want to talk about it. Yeah. And now I see guys talking about it, people in the music industry, entertainment industry, speaking on TV, and it makes me so happy, because on one side you've got the negativity of people going, oh, everyone's got a mental health problem. Well, do you know what? A lot of people do. Yeah. Whether people want to accept that or not, and if you haven't, and you're one of those people that's going, oh, look at them thinking they've got, and you haven't got mental health, I'm actually very happy for you, because it's horrible. So being able to now hear other people talk about it, you now definitely know you're not alone, and you also know there's help that we couldn't get in the 90s. Even doctors were a bit like, oh, I don't know, that sounds like a, you know, psychotic breakdown. They'd use words like that and you'd be like, what? What does that mean?
It was much more dramatic, wasn't it?
It was
all or nothing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you're currently also going through something that I know I'm doing and lots of our listeners will be going through, which is dealing with your own parents having health issues while you've got young kids and a career. How's that going?
I'll tell you, I went and saw mum and dad just last week, and it was the hardest thing, seeing the way mum had declined from just a few months before that I'd seen her. Because now it's at the stage where the Parkinson's taking complete control of her, so she can't really speak. And this is a woman that 4 or 5 years ago, I've got videos of her practically dancing with dad at my, you know, at we have a party or something. I can't remember what we did. And now, you know, she can't even talk. And I'm seeing her in that state. Found it very hard. But do you know the one thing that was really getting me through it was focusing on how one day I'm going to be like that. My children, I don't want them to be feeling like I'm feeling about mum. So it would sort of give me a way of, you need to deal with it this way because this is how you want your kids to deal with it when it's my turn. Because I know, you know, like I'm 50, I'm going to be 52. I know it's young in some ways, but, you know, my mum's only 38 years further down the line than me. That's not that long. Yeah. So I have to understand that, you know, I found solace in knowing that my kids were almost a distraction and almost a way of me thinking, right, how do I deal with this better so that I can teach them how to deal with it? Yeah. You know, so in a way it's in a strange sort of way, it's a blessing that I had them to distract me.
Listening to you talk, it's clear that you come from a really close-knit family. What aspects of the way that you were raised have you tried to replicate with your own children?
So for those that don't know, we were brought up very strict Jehovah's Witnesses. So in a very religious household that was like, you know, you weren't allowed to do a lot of things. No disrespect to it, because it kept us, you know, loved and accepted and all sorts of things. But I realized as I got older that that a lot of things that we were restricted from doing, I didn't want my kids to be restricted. And the reason for that was because I felt that, and I learned this lesson with my daughter, with Princess, when Love Island was on and she was 14, and I was like, you're not watching it. And she's like, but why, Dad? All my friends, I said, I don't care. You know, that's their parents' choice. I don't want you to watch it. This was when it first came out. And then one day I was in the other room and I heard her talking to Junior going, yeah, I saw Love Island today at school. And I heard and I was like, what? And she was like, yeah, we watched it on my friend's phone at lunchtime. And at that moment, the penny dropped and I thought, why am I trying to stop them doing everything? They're going to do it anyway. When my parents stopped me from doing pretty much everything, when I got let loose on that, you know, I just went a bit crazy. I mean, my 20s are a blur because I just went, you know, but as a witness, you're not allowed to have sex before you're married and all these sorts of things that, you know, I'm now a late teenager. I can't, my brain's going crazy. So I'm like, I don't know. I just felt that all of the things I was told I was not allowed to do, I did anyway, and with a vengeance. So that moment when I overheard that convo, I thought, right, instead of stopping them doing stuff, why don't we just sort of understand where they're coming from and maybe find a way that makes a bit of sense for everybody. And I'll tell you, that moment was a game changer for me, because now the relationship I've got with those kids is I'm a parent first, but I'm also friend to them, and they can talk to me about anything because now I understand. I want them to open up to me. Theo, I say, if there's anything on your mind, come and talk to me. I'll never judge you unless you put salt in my coffee. That's the only time I'll judge you, son.
Peter, I cannot tell you how useful this conversation is, because just this week, my 14-year-old has been asking if she can watch Love Island, and I haven't told her yes or no yet, but I've been agonising over it, and I don't know what to say. So do you think I should say yes?
Well, I'm going to say to you that I, from experience, know that they're going to do it anyway. And what I didn't want, so I can't tell you what to do because that would be terrible. But what I noticed was that the more I stopped her doing it, the more she went out of her way to find a way to watch it. So it ended up that I sort of watched it with her, and I didn't want to watch the show because I didn't. Now, I like it now, but back then it was new and I was like, what is this? I don't want, you know, I just didn't feel right. But I watched it, and then as an entertainment show does, you get addicted to it. I didn't feel comfortable watching it with her, And I delayed that 14 to late 15 before I started sitting and watching it with her. But I mean, it was a long, drawn out process where I tried to find every excuse. I can't watch it tonight. Don't watch it. Wait for me. I mean, I did all of that. I don't know where I went with it.
To watch it. Like, if I said to my husband, right, we're going to sit down and watch Love Island, I can't say on the podcast what he'd say back to me.
I know.
Yes. So I think she's lucky that you've actually got a little bit hooked.
I didn't enjoy the moment when we first started, and I thought, I feel really uncomfortable watching this in front of the kids. But actually, it only took one or two episodes, and then Princess was like, "Oh no, I'm not watching it tonight. I just want to go up and watch, I don't know, something, YouTube or whatever she was watching."
So she lost interest.
So she lost interest, and I think it was because she made such a big thing of it. And then
you made a big thing of it.
And then Idiot
so it became
over
something
here,
to fight against.
Well, Idiot over here ends up getting hooked on it. My daughter's off it. I'm there going, no, John, no, don't do that, John. I mean, it was absolutely... My wife came down and she goes, are you serious? I said, what? She goes, you're not coming to bed because you want to watch. I said, what? That moment when it was very emotional when she said, I love you. Oh, my God, she said, you've lost the plot.
So last time we spoke to you, you admitted that sometimes people come up to you and tell you that their nan loves you.
True point.
But you've kind of done a bit of a 180 because you're now coveting that because you're touring with Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons and probably lots of nans. How is that going?
It's amazing, right? So what is amazing about it is you've got an older generation coming to all these shows. So we've only done two shows so far, and both of them were packed. But the first night, I remember going, why are there young people in here? They're not going to know the songs. I met some people that wanted to meet us through the interval. And they said, I said, oh, you guys are quite, you know, they were with their parents. And I said, oh, your parents made you come along. And they said, well, they said we'd know the songs. And they said, when we heard the first one, we're like, we don't know what this is. It was Oh, What a Night. And I was surprised they didn't know that song because everyone knows that song. But they said by about halfway through, we had no idea, like Begging, you know, songs like Begging. They didn't, no one knows that was Frankie Valli.
Yes.
All these songs that were just hit after hit. And they were like, we love it. So what I noticed actually, and even last night, is that it isn't just, you know, 50 plus. We're talking right down to 18. It's quite amazing, the different audiences. And I don't know whether they're coming out of curiosity. Whatever they're coming for, they leave. They're all by the end. They're all singing and dancing and lights are on. And it's just brilliant. By the time I Can't Take My Eyes Off You comes on, everyone's just gone nuts.
How is it being away from your family on tour? Because clearly with, you know, especially with having a little one, it must be quite tricky to be away from them so much.
The one that's really struggled when I went to Australia and then I came back and had to do the tour pretty much immediately is Theo. He's really like, Dad.
How old is he now?
He's 8. And honestly, this is really the most beautiful age. And I really find it hard. And Emily goes, just be honest with him. Just say, I'm going to be home on Sunday. I keep going, oh, I might be back tomorrow. And I probably shouldn't do that. But I don't want to upset him. And he's always like, but Dad, like, can you please lie with me tonight? Or can you take me to school in the morning? And I'm thinking, I'm not back till Sunday. Today's, Thursday? And it's like, and I don't want to tell him that. And she's saying, you should tell him that. And I'm like, you're right, but I don't want to. And I don't know how. And he's finding it really hard at the moment. Mm. But Emily's so on it with Arabella. And I speak to them 2 times a day, you know, on FaceTime and stuff. So, you know, I always say, yeah, but we can, when this is all over, we can go on a holiday together as a family. And, you know, Emily's incredibly supportive, but just to make the kids understand, I say, yeah, but we'll all go on a holiday. It's going to be worth it. You know, Dad has to work so that we can all go away. And yeah. So,
well, we will let you go and deal with the hair situation that is required.
Mate,
look
at this. What a shocker. I mean, I look like a porcupine. That's a
shocker. Thank you for bringing your bad hair to the Net Mums podcast.
It's so fabulous to talk to you, Peter.
You too.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me again.
Don't forget, you can get in touch with us on all social channels, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok. Just type in NetMums and you'll find us. And if you liked what you've heard today, we'd love for you to give us a 5-star rating, press the follow button, and share the podcast on all your socials.